If you've ever driven over a pothole and wonder why it's formed, or if you've sat at a red light wondering about how traffic signals work, and really, who among us hasn't? Practical Engineering is the channel to follow. Grady Hillhouse is a civil engineer who has been sharing his knowledge on YouTube for over 6 years, amassing 115 million views and nearly 2 million subscribers. Whether it's how roads are constructed or how dams or water towers work, Grady always presents fascinating topics in an entertaining and engaging ways that make you look at the infrastructure that's all around us with a sense of awe, and the people who are designing and building it all also with a sense of awe. Hey, Grady, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for that really nice introduction.
We're pretty good at those flowery introductions. We're getting better at them.
It says your channel was made in February of 2007. It looks like the first videos, which are now available on the channel, are from about 6 years ago. So let's rewind all the way back to February of 2007. And when you kind of first came across YouTube.
Yeah, I don't know about that 2007 day. I don't know what I was doing on YouTube. I don't think I had any content on there until that first video. I've never deleted a video from my channel, so everything that's on there has been on there from the start.
So there was a little bit of a waiting period in between when you opened up the account. When did you first discover YouTube? When did you first come across YouTube as a website?
That's a tough question to answer. You know, back in its infancy, YouTube was, you know, it seemed just like a search engine for videos, and you know, that's how we were sharing viral videos way back in the day. I can't even remember when I first was introduced to it, but probably around 2013, if I'm remembering right, my wife's parents were separating, and her dad had all these power tools that he didn't have anything to do with. And he asked me if I would want to, you know, to take them. And I said, sure. Yeah. So, you know, what guy wouldn't take a bunch of power tools? And that's when I started really kind of looking at YouTube through a different lens, because I was, trying to learn how to use these tools and use them safely, and watching woodworking videos online, and slowly realize, okay, like, these aren't just random videos that people posted. Like, these are people who are posting content regularly. They've built a community around what they're doing. And that's when my eyes really opened to what YouTube was, or what it could be. And I was really into it. You know, I instantly wanted to be a part of this community. And Steve, your channel is, you know, obviously, as a new guy trying to learn woodworking, was one of the first channels that I probably ever subscribed to on YouTube.
Oh, well, thank you for that. And it's funny because, excuse me, I've been watching Practical Engineering for a long time now, and I love the show. And it was only when we asked you to be on the show on our podcast that I realized you started out doing woodworking videos. Yeah. I had no idea. That was crazy to see that.
Yeah, it was a kind of a slow transition for me, but yeah, that's how I started on YouTube, was making woodworking videos.
You were doing turning videos, turning. Right? Turning on the lathe. They're beautiful projects, by the way.
If
anybody's so familiar with Practical Engineering, they should really go back and look at some of your early work. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So let's fast forward to about a year after. And as far as I can tell, you got a garden controller. And there's a video. So basically, you had been doing woodworking videos up to this point. You did this automatic watering and data collection video, which seemed to have perhaps more kind of technical and detailed information in it. What was the situation during that time to go from woodworking to put this out there? Was it just like, hey, I'm just putting content on the channel?
That's kind of just what it was like. You know, I didn't start woodworking just to do woodworking. It was more just kind of to enable me to make anything that I felt like making. And so I didn't feel that constrained to like the genre of woodworking. My channel name at the time was just my name. Whenever I'd come up with a new project, I'd just kind of slowly make a video about it. And, you know, at first it was just woodworking, and then I just slowly started to branch out into other things.
Did that video do well out of the gate, or was that something that kind of like over time was this strange video which just kind of kept popping up or did well in search? Or
yeah, I can't really remember that well. I think it did. I think it was popular just because that video, even more than probably more than any other video I've ever made, had a lot of jokes and humor in it. And I think that really resonated. I wish I could write jokes that well for my whole YouTube career. But for some reason, that project in particular, I really had a lot of good jokes in there. And people really liked that, I think.
Well, I think your channel is an example of kind of my favorite type of channel to look through and to see how it starts out doing one thing, and then all of a sudden you can see by looking through the history of your videos when you start to notice that people are responding to a different type of video more, and you can see that you were smart enough to recognize what people were responding to and go, oh, maybe it's my engineering skills that I should really pursue. And it looks like that was it was like in 2016. That's when you rebranded to Practical.
Yeah. So, you know, just like that garden project, and there were a few others where, you know, I was building something as a demonstration for a career day, or, you know, just kind of mixing the different things that I knew about. And I remember one time at career day, my wife is an educator, and so I was talking about civil engineering, and I'd built something, and I saw how I was catching the attention of the teachers and the adults in the room. And that was something I was, and they were asking me questions, like really thoughtful questions about what I did for a living. And that's when I realized that it was like a light bulb that, you know, physical demonstrations, really how impactful they are in teaching people new things, or just, you know, making educational content more engaging. And so that's what really got the wheel spinning of like, oh, I could talk about what I do for a living, but I can still make stuff and kind of combine the two, and people might find that really interesting. So I tried that, you know, in a few different ways on the channel, and really started to get some traction. And so that's when I realized, oh, you know, this could be a thing, basically. And that's when I decided, oh, I'm going to create some branding and really kind of not necessarily turn this you know, take it a step past a hobby, but at least take it a little bit more seriously.
And I guess that begs the question, is it still a hobby channel with you, or is this are you still a full-time practical
engineer,
civil engineer?
That's a great question. I mean, I still am a licensed civil engineer, but yeah, as of January this year, this is my full-time gig.
Wow, congratulations. That was a lot of thought went into that.
Yeah, it felt like a very big step, but you know, it's been a pretty neat journey so far, and I'm really enjoying working for myself, to be honest, and I'm really excited about, you know, the opportunities that having some more time to devote to the channel and all the other opportunities that are coming through the channel is going to afford me.
And it's a fresh decision. Was this kind of predicated because of what happened during 2020? Was that kind of a time to readdress some things or realign your focus?
In some ways, yes. There was a lot of different things that went into the decision. A big part of it is we just had a baby. And so the free time that I had available to spend on the channel really plummeted. And I just got to the point where I was going to have to pick one or the other. And he kind of forced my decision, basically.
Well, congratulations on the new baby.
Thank you.
So when you were a civil engineer as your full-time day job, what kind of civil engineering, did you have a specialty or what kind of work did you do?
Yeah, I worked on dams almost exclusively. I was part of I worked for a consulting firm, and my group worked almost exclusively on dams and other infrastructure associated with waterways, like bank stabilizations and canals and stuff like that.
Years ago, there used to be a show on, I think it was on the History Channel. It was called Modern Marvels. I don't know. Do you ever remember that show?
Yeah.
And your show kind of, to me, it takes up where that left off, because I always enjoyed that show. Yes. And I remember getting hooked on that show because, and at one time, the point I knew that I was completely hooked was when I sat and watched an hour-long show on airport tarmacs. And I thought, why in the world? But it was so interesting. And it's the same with your show. It's like, I find the title is like on culverts. What is a culvert? And I'm like, why do I want to? And I watch it and I'm like completely sucked into it. I'm like, this is the most interesting thing, because I see culverts all the time, and you explain it in such an interesting way.
Thanks.
So the exact same thing happened to me. Me and my wife were driving and we passed a water tower and we're like, hey, why are there water towers? Why are they floating in the sky like that? Why don't they just store it underground where we don't need to build this huge thing? And then my wife was like, oh, perhaps it's a way to identify spaces, because they normally put like the city you're in on the side. So it's like maybe some kind of random sign type of thing. And then watching the video, obviously, you laid it all out. I frantically sent it to my wife, and we celebrated that. So clearly, you get that a lot. So this is leading into a few questions. The first question being, right now, what is the balance between the videos that you want to make and the videos that your audience wants to see?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm not that. I don't feel that in tune with my audience, to be honest, it's because for so long this has been a hobby of mine that I never. I mean, it's not that I didn't try to put videos out that people would be interested in, but I never let that be the driving decision for the choices that I made with the channel. And now I am having to be more thoughtful about that. And one really nice thing about doing it full time now is that I don't have potential conflicts of interest with my full time job. So I can talk about, you know, projects that could have been potential clients in the future. I can talk about, you know, things that might be a little more controversial. And those are definitely things that I get requested a lot. Like, can you talk about this particular project that's really cool? Or can you talk about this failure that happened? And always the answer has had to be no, because of my job. But now I have a little bit more freedom to go after topics like that. So I'm excited about that.
What would be the example of something that would be controversial in civil engineering?
You know, any failures that involve, you know, loss of life, that's something that, you know, you have to be very thoughtful about how you talk about it, especially because, you know, failures are often the result of a whole bunch of different things that you don't know about. And so, you know, until that official report comes out where someone really went into all the weeds, it can be hard to tell the full story, you know?
And I would imagine even now being on your own, you still have to approach that with the same level.
Oh yeah, you still do, but I mean, the stakes are a little bit lower.
How often do you run into the boring obstacle? Have you been like working on videos and you're just like, this is getting far too technical. This doesn't have that, like, just that natural relatability to it. as relatable as water towers is, let's say that.
Yeah. It's not that often that I scrap a video. In fact, it's almost never. Usually it's just a rewrite of some kind to try to, you know, hone in on a curiosity gap or, you know, just simplify it a little bit. Now I work with a copy editor, so I have someone kind of keeping an eye on me because I do have a tendency to go overboard, and it's always easier to trim than it is to add content later. So that's a good tendency to have in a way.
You do an amazing job of taking, I think, rather dense material and getting it down to the core of what an audience, a general audience, would need to know without including a lot of math or any kind of anything that would make it more complicated. They're so engaging, these videos that you make. And I can tell that a lot of care goes into those and the editing. And one thing I wanted to ask you about real quickly on those is the footage that you use in those videos. it looks like it goes beyond stock footage because you get some real detailed exact shots of what you're talking about that I think, how would a stock footage have that particular, yeah, you know, part of rebar in a bridge or something, you know?
Yeah. So that's tough. I've kind of developed a whole, I have a folder of shortcuts that I use to find images. I have quite a few stock footage libraries that I use. And then also a lot of public domain resources. The good thing is, like, there's a lot of federal agencies involved in infrastructure. And so all that stuff is nice. In the public domain. So a lot of times I can go to a technical manual or something from, you know, the Department of Transportation or FEMA or whoever and steal some of their stuff.
Do you ever pay for B-roll? Is there anything very specific that you need? So you go through whatever processes are involved for paying for B-roll?
Yes, definitely. There's a few websites that I pay for individual clips, stock footage clips. Getty is one of them, and then Pond5 is the other one that I use a lot because they have a pretty big library.
This is fascinating because I think you're probably the first creator that we've had on who actively relies upon B-roll so much and such specific B-roll that you're probably in a position where you do need to pay sometimes. What percentage do you reckon is free or you can source or find a way to do? And then what percentage do you have to pay for?
It really depends on the video. Sometimes it's something that's so simple that, you know, there's just bucket loads of free content available, and sometimes it's so specific that you just end up with a pretty big stock footage budget on that video. I mean, that's just the way it goes, and it really does vary depending on the topic.
Do you make some of the graphics yourself if you need specific graphics or charts or whatnot?
Yeah, I do almost all my own graphics, and that's something I'd love to not do anymore because I'm not that good at, I'm not a graphic designer, I'm not a motion graphics person, but for one, you know, because it's been a hobby of mine, the time involved in communicating a specific graphic to another person and having them, you know, do the back and forth to get it right, it just wasn't worth it to me. I can do it myself much quicker. It just doesn't look as nice, basically. And so that's been kind of my philosophy up until now. And I'm hoping it's on my list. It's not at the top of the list, but it's on my list to get some help in that department.
And for anybody listening to this that hasn't watched Practical Engineering, and if you haven't, you should go watch it right now. A large part of your videos consists of the physical demonstrations and the models that you make to demonstrate these points. And how much work goes into that? They look they're really well made, and they demonstrate the processes of how a sinkhole forms and all of these things. And you can see them very visually. And is there any of those in particular that were particularly difficult to figure out how to convey?
Oh man, the sinkhole one is actually kind of a cool example because that's one that just one time my wife said, you should make a video about how sinkholes form. I never even thought about that. And I was thinking, how could I show that in a physical demonstration? And I kind of thought of some ideas and I put it all together and plugged the pump in. And I mean, within the first 5 seconds, I was just like, oh my gosh, it worked perfectly. This is going to be such a big hit. And it was. That was such a eureka moment. But yeah, a lot of them, it's a lot of like fiddling around trying to get something shown. A lot of times it's, you know, I can see it's working, but it's not quite coming across on camera. And so, yeah, I spend quite a bit of time in the garage working on those demos and shooting them is, you know, building them is one part and then shooting is the second part. And it's a lot of effort for sure.
Do you think that's the most fun part about your job?
It's definitely one of my favorite parts of the channel. I like almost every aspect of the video production process, which is a good thing. But yeah, building the demos is a lot of fun and just trying to conceptualize, you know, something, because a lot of these are just like ideas that I come up with in my head as demonstrations. Like it's not something I've seen anywhere else. And so that process is really enjoyable.
And without those demonstrations, it would be very difficult to explain those concepts that you're trying to get across. It really would.
Yeah, in a lot of cases. Sometimes the demo is almost just B-roll, like the power grid stuff that I did. You know, there's only so much you can demonstrate, but I try to make it, and I'm going to continue to try to make it even more a larger focus of each video is some kind of physical demonstration.
How do you organize your ideas for videos?
So topics, just ideas. I just have a Google Docs doc that grows faster than I'll ever be able to make videos. You know, I get almost all the emails that I get are suggestions for topics. So, and a lot of them are really good. And so I try to keep track of those. And I, you know, as I add them to the list, I try to kind of keep them in groups. But I produce, right now I produce videos in batches. So I write four, shoot the talking headshots all in one day. And then build the demos kind of over the course of editing. And so I try to usually pick four that kind of relate to each other in some way. So just because it's nice to have a little bit of a series and you know, the 10-minute video on an engineering topic is sometimes feels very limiting. So it's nice to maybe kind of expand on ideas in a series rather than in a single video. So that process, that production process and how I stay organized on that has evolved significantly over time and will continue to evolve now that I'm working on it full time.
Does most of your topics rely on your own personal knowledge and experience, or are there some topics that you just have to research a lot more?
Yeah, so anything water related really does just lean, and you'll notice if you scroll through the videos, like a lot of my videos are water related because that's what I know and that's what I find the most interesting. But yeah, there are definitely topics that require a lot more research, like the power grid videos, anything in geotechnical like soils. That's something I know a little bit about, but not a lot of bit about. So I do some research to bolster those scripts.
When you mentioned doing controversial topics, would you ever approach topics such as and I know you live in Texas there, and you had the power outage, you know, last month with the storms, and here in California, now we do this, the power company shuts off the power if there's wind. Is that kind of thing you would ever touch, or is that best left?
Funny you mentioned that.
Stay tuned.
stay tuned. Hopefully next week. Yeah. No, I mean, one of the things about being full time that I'm excited about is, you know, maybe trying to catch some news cycles on things like that, because there are stories that come across that that are very difficult for the general public to parse. And so you're relying on a lot of finger pointing and name calling and just political BS. And it's hard to like sift through that and get the facts, and especially for something as complicated as the power grid. So that is something I want to try to focus more on, is like telling the story from a technical point of view to try to elevate the dialogue a little bit above, you know, the opinions of the sometimes uninformed opinions.
From the point that you're writing the video to the point that you're launching the video, on average, how much time kind of elapses in between those two times?
Well, the ones that I do in batches, it could be 4 months, because right now my production schedule is monthly. So I release a video the first Tuesday of every month. I'm hoping to ramp up from that, but right now that's what it is. And so there are times when the video was written and the talking headshots were shot 4 months ahead of time. But I think more on average, it's more like a month. I mean, basically, my production schedule was every ounce of free time that I had that month got put into the video, and whatever got done and released on the first Tuesday.
So it's kind of hard to use that as like, this was the schedule, because the schedule was just when you had time to make this happen.
The schedule was whatever it was, yeah.
We are on a platform where you can spend months working on a video, and then it all comes down to how good the thumbnail is. So, A, I love the consistency in your thumbnails.
Yeah.
Love the consistency in your thumbnails. How much time do you spend on thumbnail design and just like deafening and looking at the same thumbnail for hours and hours and hours?
Oh my gosh, almost none. I honestly, when I put the video to upload, then I start scrolling through stock images to see what would be a good thumbnail. And I mean, sometimes it's a little different. Like, you know, if the demo looks nice on the thumbnail, sometimes I'll you know, get the camera out and try to get a nice picture for a thumbnail or whatever, but really I haven't been that thoughtful about it, and I think just got lucky with the topics that I choose. But that's another thing on my list is to revamp the graphic design and everything that goes into the thumbnails, because I think that's some low-hanging fruit for the channel.
And now that you're doing this full time, what in an ideal world would you see yourself as doing on the channel exclusively? And in other words, how much of it do you want to try to farm out so you can focus on specific things?
Definitely the writing and the demonstrations. Right. Everything else I can see, you know, being offloaded, but even the editing, because the topics are so specific, like you mentioned, just choosing the stock footage that covers the voiceover you've got to have some technical knowledge to be able to do that. And so, it's definitely, scaling is definitely a struggle just because of the nature of the content. You have to have people who, you know, who talk the talk basically. And so, that's something I'm thinking about for the future, but honestly, you know, I really enjoy almost every aspect of the video production, and I'm hesitant to give up too much of it just because it's fun. Like, finally, this is my job and I enjoy it. So not that I didn't enjoy being a civil engineer, but I'm excited at the opportunity to really like to not feel like I have to rush through each step and take my time and do a good job with it.
Do you have any history in teaching? Or are you just a natural born instructor?
No, I don't. My wife was a kindergarten teacher for a long time, and now is an assistant principal. So I have some exposure to the field of education, but no, I don't have any training in that myself.
Your presentation is amazing as well. I love how you come across as like your friendly uncle who knows everything about things and explains it in such a straightforward way. How have you, over the past 6 years, managed to up your level of professionalism, like understanding that you're the presenter of information and all of the nuance that comes with that, but still trying to keep that like YouTube relatability where you are clearly different from someone that I would watch on TV or whatever. So I still need to feel connected to you, but now you're doing this at the level that you're doing. So I'm also expecting you to be polished and professional. Right. Has that been something that you actively think about, or do you just let that happen organically?
Yeah, no, that's something I think a lot about. I remember the terror the first time I put my face on camera. I don't know which video it was, but, you know, part of that decision was what you mentioned. Like, I want to feel, or I want my audience to feel a little bit more of a connection to me, because I think that makes the content more engaging. But part of it was, I'm not that good of a public speaker, and maybe this is a way for me to get better at that. And I don't know if it worked, but I found a lot of cheats along the way to make it look like it did. One of them is the use of a teleprompter. Almost all my videos, I'm using a prompter for the talking headshots. The other way is I have a director. One of my best buddies since childhood is an actor in LA, and now he flies down to San Antonio a few times a year when we shoot the talking headshots, and he directs them, so he can tell me, hey, you know, you said that funny, or hey, you know, you don't sound like you really care about that piece or whatever. Like, he can kind of coach me through the talking head shots. And I think that has really elevated, you know, how I come across on camera.
So how is monetization working out for you? I know you get a lot of views per video. You're producing about, I would imagine your output is going to start to increase a little bit. And I know you've got a pretty strong following on Patreon too. Would you say that's a large source of funding your channel?
Patreon, I wouldn't call it a large pillar. It's definitely a pillar. when you look at like the integrated advertisements and the AdSense revenue, it doesn't compare to those two.
And do you provide any extra content over there on Patreon?
Not really. Patreon, you know, that's something it really took me a long time to wrap my head around, you know, having a crowdfunding campaign and accepting viewer support for the channel. But so many people told me, you know, they want to be a part of what I'm doing, that finally just said, yeah, let's do it. And the way that I use Patreon, I mean, for one, it just gives people some buy-in to the channel, which I think is really nice. It gives them a little more access to me. It makes them feel like they're a part of what I'm doing, which they are. And so, you know, adding their names to the end of the video is a way that I kind of recognize that. But the other way that I kind of stumbled upon is that this is a very small but dedicated group of people who care about what I'm doing more than the general audience on YouTube. And so being able to solicit feedback, ask questions, ask for suggestions, things like that from that group in particular has been really nice. And I think they get out as much as I do, like just being able to be a part of that process and be able to provide that feedback and chime in on those questions and things like that. So yeah, the crowdfunding campaign actually has been a really nice thing for the channel just from that aspect alone. The funding does not hurt either. And it's really nice to have a stream of revenue that, you know, that isn't associated with advertising and isn't necessarily beholden to large companies or whatever. So those are some of the things I think about with the crowdfunding campaign.
It looks like your videos could easily be 20 or 30 minutes long.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like they're very purposely put at the length that they're at. Two questions. One, obviously, is that deliberate? Do you intentionally try to get it to a certain... Do you have a sweet spot for the length of a Practical Engineering video? And two, how happy were you when they changed the third mid-roll ad to the 8-minute mark and not the 10-minute mark?
Yeah. I am thoughtful about the length. I don't know. I mean, I'm thoughtful about it in the way that this is what's worked for me so far. So I don't want to deviate too far from that. And now, you know, I've created an expectation with my viewers that, you know, this is kind of the level of detail that I go into in my videos. This is kind of the length of them and so on. And so, so yeah, when I write a script, I do have a certain word count that I shoot for. And you know, that's a nice thing for me as a writer too, because it kind of forces me to boil a topic down to the right level. Like to not go too deep into the weeds, not go into too many tangents, and just really focus on what I want to talk about. So that's nice.
Have you thought about experimenting with full-length content or even the new shorts that are available on the platform?
Yeah, the shorts I'm not that interested in. I think getting anything below a minute is just going to be a real challenge for the type of stuff that I talk about. But I have...
Explain a power grid in 30 seconds.
yeah. But I have thought about, you know, exploring longer form topics, because people do, I get that question a lot. Like, I want a little more meat on the bones, basically. And sometimes it really does feel like I have to boil it down so far that it's not that interesting, or half the video was just context because it's such a complicated topic that you had to have enough background to understand it. And then you've wasted half your video just talking about that. So I definitely am thinking about, trying some longer length videos and seeing how people respond to those.
Let me switch gears just for a moment here and ask you a question about STEM education and about, you seem to have a unique position where you can kind of straddle between understanding the blue collar world of the construction workers who are making these enormous projects and the engineers who are designing these. And it seems like in the past few years that we've been putting such an emphasis on science and math education and almost to the exclusion of the trades. And in fact, it seems like kids are almost being discouraged from entering construction fields and plumbing and electricians and all of these things that we need for infrastructure. I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. In fact, there's been so many times where I think back and say, man, if I could just go back and start a heating and AC company, I could be rich right now. I think that's definitely true that for some reason, and I don't fully understand the reason that we put such an emphasis on science and technology, engineering and mathematics. Maybe it was just competition with other countries or whatever, but I definitely have seen throughout my career that the trades are a little bit looked down upon, even though those people make great money. They work very rewarding careers and you know, they do a lot of
they're really so cool necessary.
Stuff. Yeah, they're absolutely
they're necessary. So needed for society. And I mean, especially with girls, girls are never encouraged to go into the trades. It's like exclusively, they're like pigeonholed. You have to do math or science, and those are your options.
Yeah. And it's crazy because honestly, that's all you hear from construction contractors is, I cannot get enough good help. Right. Like I can't hire enough people. I can't keep them on. And it's like, man, I don't know the answer to that, but it's definitely something that we need to work on.
I think so too. We have the same problem just trying to hire people to, you know, fix things around the house. It's always a struggle. Yeah.
Everyone's busy all the time. Yeah.
Do you remember a few years ago when the concrete craze and like woodworking and makers where everything was being made with concrete, and I would watch those and I would think of your video on using rebar and reinforcing concrete, and I'd say, you know, in a couple of years there's going to be a lot of collapsing concrete furniture. Yeah,
that was one of my questions actually, is why is concrete so exciting? Because I think it's your channel trailer, isn't it? Is your reinforced concrete video, I believe.
I guess you'd call it a trailer. I think way back in the day, I had the idea that I looked at all my statistics for videos and I found the video that had the highest percentage of subscribers per view. And so I just made that.
Nice. It's exactly what you're supposed to do. So I was just asking if there was actually a thought there. Are you an analytics person? Do you spend a lot of time watching viewer drop off and retention?
I'm trying to get better.
You're trying.
I'm trying to get better. I mean, YouTube has made a ton of progress in like making that information more accessible. But, you know, especially since this has been my hobby for so long, I didn't pay that close attention to it. But there's a lot of good information there. And I want to get better about trying to learn what my audience is interested in and what they respond to, and what better way to do so than to look at those analytics? There's so much good information in there.
I also want to compliment you on an older video where you made some shelves for your cat. as a cat
person, you can appeal to Steve really just by having a cat involved.
But you know what I loved about that though? So he so Grady made these shelves, if you haven't seen it, it's a cat tree that is attached to the wall. But in that video, you actually did like calculations on how much strength they needed to support the cat and if the cat would jump on it. I thought that was so funny.
Well, part of it was, there's this ongoing tension in the woodworking community about pocket screws.
Right.
And so I was trying to show, like, in a in an analytical way, why you wouldn't want to use pocket screws and try to apply some of that engineering theory to it.
That was funny because I just did our house. I put up a whole bunch of catification shelves all around the whole dining room and everything. Nice. And it's like, I wonder if I should have, you know, paid more attention to that. But they seem to be okay. They haven't collapsed them yet. What's your cat's name?
We have two cats.
Oh, you have
one
two
is
now.
Hank and one is Lucy.
Hank and Lucy. And you've got a dog too.
No, that was my brother's dog.
Oh, that actually. Was your brother's
dog. He doesn't
dog.
Live with us anymore, so.
Oh, okay.
We're just cats now.
What does Grady do outside of engineering and outside of YouTube?
Oh, play with the baby. Nice. That's pretty much all I have time for. No, we do a lot of just, you know, hanging out. We ride bikes, we go on walks, we just spend quality time together in whatever way that we can get.
Very nice.
What direction would you like to see the channel heading now that you've got this as a full-time gig?
More content, first and foremost. You know, the monthly schedule always felt like, you know, people would forget about me by the time the next video came out. I know that's not true. There's a lot of good content creators who do monthly videos, but I've always wanted to put more content out there. So that's a big part of it. But you know, in the future, I want it to be a resource where people can learn about infrastructure. You know, I want anytime, it's just like, you know, anytime something astronomy happens, people think of Neil deGrasse Tyson. I want the channel to be that for infrastructure. So anytime there's a story or something happening with infrastructure in the world, I want the YouTube channel and the brand itself to be, you know, the first thing on people's mind for that.
You know, and those are the kind of topics that are, I think, great for YouTube because it's so, these are the kind of things that we think about. I do think about how does this stoplight or this traffic lights change and why does it seem like sometimes they take forever and other times they don't? And you explain all of that. Or like Chad was saying with the water towers, I've always seen those and I've always wondered, well, how can that possibly be enough water in those to, you know, to feed all of the homes and businesses? And well, it doesn't have to be because that's just like a storage and I didn't know all that stuff. So these are all like questions. And I think that you may not think about it that way, but I think a lot of your videos start with a question that people might be asking.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny because that's what drew me to civil engineering was like just being interested in all the things, all the constructed environment. And I think I just got lucky that I kind of stumbled upon something that other people, you know, it's just that curiosity gap of these are things you see in the world and they're so ubiquitous that you've never like been very conscious about it. But if someone can bring it to your attention, then you're like, oh, I have seen that and I have wondered about that before.
And the best part is then you can go and tell other people, and you end up looking really smart. So you end up enabling people to look really smart.
Exactly.
Or to win trivia competitions at bars and stuff like that. You.
Yeah. And actually, so I've signed a book deal to work on basically a field guide to infrastructure. So it's a very heavily illustrated book that covers kind of all aspects of the constructed environment. And really is meant to be like, okay, you know, walk out your door and look up at the power pole and here's the things you're seeing, that kind of stuff. So I'm deep in manuscript preparation and illustration. It's a ton of work, but it's a project I've always wanted to do and I'm really excited about it. So
that's just the kind of thing I love. You see this stuff just like looking at the power pole and wondering things we see every day. And like I mentioned, the culverts. I always see culverts. Now I see them everywhere after watching your video.
Exactly.
I'm like, oh, that's what they're for.
And it's even a curse.
There's little ones, there's big ones. They're all over the place. They don't have to.
I did the same thing with weirs. I'm like, that's a weir. Yeah. Look at that. That's a weir.
Yeah.
Well, Grady, this has been a real joy to have you on the show. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. And
yeah,
I've been watching your show for so long and always fascinating. So when I reached out to you and you responded so quickly, and then I found out you did woodworking, it was just amazing. It was so cool.
Nice. Yeah, thank you all for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Please head over to YouTube and subscribe to Practical Engineering so you can become an expert on water towers, just like Chad. Also, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts and you enjoy our show, please take a moment to leave a review and a 5-star rating. Apparently, those ratings and reviews go a long way in letting people know that this show actually exists. We really appreciate your support. You know, every creator has an interesting, unique story, and we just want to bring all those stories to you. Thanks for listening.